You know, we've talked for years on this program about government disclosure. Will it happen? Up next, we talk AD. After disclosure, Richard Dolan joins us and Bryce Zabel. Get ready for both of them on Coast to Coast AM. Well, first, let me introduce Richard Dolan, author of groundbreaking historical series, UFOs and the National Security State. Now, that chronicles the modern UFO age with an emphasis on military encounters, government secrecy. This work has been acclaimed as one of the finest history of UFO phenomenon available in any language, and he has developed fresh insights into practical challenges and opportunities for true disclosure of the UFO phenomenon. He has written a new work with Bryce Zabel called AD After Disclosure. Hello, Richard Dolan.
Hi, George. It's a pleasure to be on with you.
I am looking forward to this tonight. I really am. This is going to be exciting. Of course, our dear friend Bryce Zabel, he has created five primetime network series, notably NBC's Emmy Award-winning UFO series, Dark Skies. I'm getting hundreds of emails from a lot of listeners just about Dark Skies, and he's worked on a dozen television writing projects. He has collaborated with producers such as Steven Spielberg, David E. Kelly, and Bryce is a former CNN correspondent, was the first writer elected as chairman and CEO of the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences since our dear old friend loved his shows, Rod Serling. Here's Bryce Zabel. Bryce, how are you?
I'm fantastic, and every visit I've made to your show has been a great one, so thank you for having me back.
Well, our pleasure. It was great meeting you some years ago, by the way, when we did that sci-fi show.
That should have gone forward longer.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. It should, but I had a great time. And I'm getting a lot of emails about Dark Skies. Everybody wants to know why it's not on still. They loved it.
Well, you know, one of the things that's happened is that Dark Skies was released last year on DVD. So after all those years in the darkness, if you will, after it left NBC, people finally got a chance to do what people do with television now, which is to sit down and watch them in chronology and re-enjoy them. So that I think that probably explains it as much as anything.
Well, you and our dear friend Mr. Dolan here, you've done a great job with AD After Disclosure. Richard, you've hit another home run, my friend.
Well, thank you, George. This book, you know, we've gone through this book two times now, and both times it was just a great adventure for Bryce and me to try to do something really different. There's lots of books written on UFOs, hundreds, thousands. Many of them are excellent, some, you know, different quality, different types of approaches to it. But what we realize is that no one tried to do this type of a book, which is simply with our feet planted as firmly on the ground as we could to try to look into the future, to try to understand, you know, if you assume that UFOs are real, or if you believe that UFOs are real, and if you believe there's a cover-up, then the logical question is, well what happens then? If that cover-up, if that secrecy were to end. And really what we felt in writing this book for the first time was that this hadn't been done. Lots of people talking about disclosure, no one really trying to see the world in a post-disclosure setting. How might disclosure actually happen? And then what happens? How bad will it rock our world in the aftermath? And all of these issues, we went into it as blind as anyone else would, but the difference was we really tried to think it through to the best of our ability. And like any book that's a first, I'm sure and I hope that others will follow and will build on our thoughts, maybe correct things that maybe we didn't get right. All these things, this is the act of informed speculation, and we don't pretend that we've got the psychic flash on how it's all going down, but we've given it what we feel is our best analytical shot. And I have to tell you, this book is an exciting read. I've got enough of a distance from it now, from the writing and the editing process. Just going through this new edition, it just flies.
Well, it's so exciting. You got Stan Lee to write a blip for it.
Yeah. You can't go wrong with Stan Lee at a time when the Avengers, which is his creation, along with Jack Kirby,
huge movie now.
is the biggest opening movie of all time. So that's pretty good timing.
We're going to just sit back, the three of us. We're going to be like we're at a table here, and let's just enjoy this three-hour session, and both of you jump in at any time as we talk about where we're headed with this. And Richard, as you know, and you both reference our dear friend Steve Bassett in the AD here, who has said for years that, you know, he believes disclosure's right around the corner. And I'm at odds with him on that. I just think if it happens, it's going to be from some whistleblower, some group. I don't think government is going to just come out and say it. What do you two feel?
Well, yeah, let me just jump in on that one first, Bryce. I'm sure we'll follow up on this. I don't think either of us believes that disclosure is just going to be some gimme that the president of the United States says, here you go, folks. That's not how it's really going to go down. I do think that it's going to happen one day, but it's always been, to me, in my mind, this paradox. It's always been an impossibility. In fact, I've had a friendly level of argument and debate with Stephen Bassett about this issue for over a decade.
Right.
I've never been on board with whether it's Steve or many other people who have stated that disclosure is imminent. He's not the only one. Lots of people have been saying this, and I've personally never agreed with any one of those predictions. However, here's the thing. The president, all the other secret keepers, the black budget community, they really have nothing to gain, at least in the immediate term right now, by disclosing anything. So it's not going to be their initiative. But the thing is, they're not the only game in town here. They're not the only part of the equation. There's those secret keepers, yes. Let's not forget these other beings, whoever, whatever they are, that may force someone's hand. Then the real variable, which we sometimes forget, is us, we the people.
George, you raise a good point, because people have been predicting imminent disclosure since Roswell, for as long as we can remember. It goes back, even Donald Kehoe, when he was talking about the Silence Group in his early writing, thought that they would crumble imminently. And frankly, it goes in cycles. Every few years, people say it's going to be imminent. And in fact, that very question is one of the things that I get asked most often, whether it's in a public forum or a private conversation, which is, you know, when do you think it's going to happen? And I don't think that Rich and I have a crystal ball. We have instead laid out some of the markers that would have to happen that would be the precedent before it could happen. So what I always tell people when they ask me, I say, I think it's likely to happen in my lifetime. I'm pretty darn sure it's going to happen in my kids' lifetimes.
And one other thing is simply that disclosure always seems like an impossibility, because in a sense it is, but we just forget that we're all sitting on a big fast freight train, and it's called our timeline. We are moving as a society at hyper fast speed here.
Every year.
Right. Think about the last 20 years. It's the age of the internet. Anyone who's more than 25, 30 years old realizes that they have gone through an absolutely revolutionary period in even our own brief lifetimes. So where are we going to be in another 10, 20, 30 years? Do we honestly think we're going to be in the same position technologically, socially, in terms of our ability to communicate as a global culture that we are today? No, I don't think so. Now, no one knows what the exact trigger mechanism is, but clearly we're in high gear, in a way that human society has never been.
Well, Rich, that's the difference, isn't it? That if previously people have expected secret keepers to come forward and tell the truth, we instead, with technology being what it is, and the media and the communications and all the changes that are happening in our society right now, for the first time ever, we're actually in a position to disclose for ourselves rather than wait for it to be top down. So in other words, we may very well be in a grassroots disclosure rather than a top down disclosure situation, which would make it, if not necessarily imminent, it would make it, as Rich said, inevitable.
Do you think presidents even know what the heck is going on?
Oh, man, that's a good one. Well, I'll tell you, I had a conversation a couple of years ago with a gentleman. He's quite famous, actually, and maybe one day I can tell you who he is. But he knows a bunch of ex-presidents. He knows a bunch of ex-CIA directors, Department of Defense former directors as well. This is a super elite guy. It was kind of cool for me that I had the chance to chat with him on a number of occasions.
Was he ever a member of government, or he just knows them?
Oh, no, he was a member.
He was a member.
And in retirement, he's had one-on-one chats with a lot of former U.S. presidents, former CIA directors, and Department of Defense heads. And I asked him this question. I said, look, how much do presidents know? Everyone wants to know this. Who doesn't want to know that? So he said to me, basically, some more than others. And in subsequent conversations with this man, really what it came out to is that a lot of them don't seem to know a whole lot. Some of them do. I'm not talking just about presidents, but about that whole upper tier.
Well, what you just said, though, Richard, some more than others, implies to me that those who know, those presidents who know a little bit more than others, are given that information by whatever group knows about it on their own.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, George, I made an entire television series that you just referenced on that very topic. Dark Skies is all about whether JFK knew or did not know about the existence of this cover-up within his own administration. And it's interesting because obviously we decided to take that storyline forward in the television series as a fictitious event, but it actually mirrors what a number of people think. As Rich has pointed out, you could almost go through the litany going back to Truman, and people have done this. Obviously, Truman must have known something. He was in charge when Roswell was happening. But as time has gone on, and Rich is a better expert on how secrets become insular and folded within the walls of government and other institutions, but it's been harder and harder for presidents to know much. The one I would say probably knew more than most was within our lifetimes was George Bush the first, the elder, because he had been in charge of the CIA, and he, Rich, if I'm not mistaken, he as much as admitted in one conversation that he did know some about it.
Yeah, he did. That was during his campaign for president the first time. A UFO researcher named Charles Huffer kind of cornered him and asked him about this.
It's funny, though, not to be partisan, but it seems like more Republican presidents knew about this than Democratic presidents.
That's probably true, if you recall. One of the first things Bill Clinton did when he got into office was dispatch Webster Hubble to find out who killed JFK and whether UFOs were real. And Hubble went out and looked around, maybe not as hard as he ought to, maybe a little half-heartedly, but he came back relatively soon and wasn't able to tell Clinton one way or the other. And I think one of the great things that Clinton probably regrets is that he never found out the truth about that. It seems like he was shut out of it pretty much.
I can speak to that also. I think that there's one story that's come to me. I hate giving all of these uncited sources to you.
I know you know them, so that's good enough for me, Rich.
I do know, and one gentleman who had a conversation with Bill Clinton spoke to me. He spoke with Bill Clinton in 1998, around that time, so Clinton was still president. And they had a few moments together, not this whole discussion. And Clinton, this person said, gee, thanks for liberalizing the Freedom of Information Act. That was in 1995. And then it briefly came about to the topic of UFOs, just very in a tangential sort of way. But this guy was interested in it, and he raised the issue. And what President Clinton said was, in effect, yeah, I really wish that we could do a little bit more about that. And that was it. It's
also a matter of degree. There are levels of security, and anyone who's worked in government or military or has had security clearances know that you don't get downloaded the information in total on any one topic. So it's entirely possible that certain presidents have known through either briefing or through just osmosis, I guess, that the situation is more real than not, but they haven't had that detailed briefing. And sometimes I would imagine they don't get the detailed briefing so that they can maintain plausible deniability. I mean, that's been an institutional fallback position for many, many years.
What about the incredible Richard Nixon story that he took Jackie Gleason, the then comedian, to a Homestead Air Force Base in Florida and showed him a dead alien? Did you two ever uncover any more on that?
I don't think we got anything more than what's out there in the public domain.
It's a wild story.
Well, Gleason's ex-wife, a lady named Beverly McKittrick, wrote about this. And in fact, it's a story that got corroboration from Larry Warren, who's involved in the Rendlesham case, when he spoke with Gleason also. And really, the story is, I mean, Gleason, what people sometimes forget, was a UFO fanatic. He had the best personal library of UFOs possibly in the world during his lifetime. He was really into it.
Maybe second to you, Richard.
Well, I wonder what happened to his library after his death. Do you know, Richard?
No, not offhand.
Let's make an offer on it.
But you're right. He did have a huge library. He's obsessed with it.
And he was friends with Nixon. They were very good friends. They did a lot of fundraising.
They golfed together.
Absolutely. So they did do a publicly documented fundraiser golf thing. It was 1971.
The part about that story, George, that I've always loved is that if you believe the story as it's been told, as I understand it, Nixon shed his Secret Service team and actually drove his own car to Jackie Gleason's house.
Right.
And
picked him up.
Took him to, was it Homestead Air Force
Yep.
Base? I just find that really interesting and compelling, and it's one of the reasons why, although I started as a journalist and I've become a storyteller now, I don't have the same, I guess, standard of having to prove that if someday I can adapt.
Could you imagine the security guard at the gate seeing Nixon?
Their jaw would drop to the floor.
Hi, let me in.
They're guarding evidence of extraterrestrial life, and the President of the United States and Jackie Gleason show up at their door. I just think that's a scene I would pay to write that scene.
There's got to be, you know, the old saying, where there's smoke, there's fire. There's got to be some truth to this story somehow.
I personally think there is. It's gotten a couple of ex-Secret Service agents chimed in on that whole thing. One said, impossible, president could not possibly escape. Another one said, no, in fact, Nixon hated being tailed by Secret Service. It was one of his most biggest pet peeves as president.
Well, Kennedy was the same way.
Yeah, and they were constant. Well, yeah, I'm sure Kennedy wanted to have some private time with the ladies, right?
Well, that's what I heard.
but Nixon wanted to escape Secret Service frequently, and so it was very much in line with his personality.
This is one of those tough stories, though, George, where it's hard to really source it and say definitively this is a true story. The best you can do is say it makes a great story, and there are elements of the background to it that could lead you to believe it has a possibility of being true. And it certainly, if you accept that, for example, if you just accept that Roswell was real, a real extraterrestrial event, then going forward, it isn't that long in the future from Roswell that Nixon is president and there would be things that presidents might have access to.
But what amazes me is the fact that Nixon would, if it's true, Nixon would know about this, know about the bodies, and then subsequent presidents would have no idea what was going on.
Well, Jimmy Carter's story here. What I received from, mentioned this other individual who knew all the presidents and secretaries of defense, the same individual told me the Jimmy Carter account. Now, this individual was not physically present in the Carter White House at that time, but he had a very close friend who was working with the Carter administration at this time, was in the Carter White House. And this is how he got the story, but he could, you know. So that's, Carter gets briefed June 1977.
Hold on right there, Rich. We're going to come back with Richard Dolan, Bryce Zabel, as we talk about their latest work, AD After Disclosure. Man, wow. We'll be back. Well, this show's just revving up with our two special guests, Bryce Zabel, Richard Dolan, as we talk about their work, AD, After Disclosure. Much more to talk about when we come right back. End of the program, last hour, we'll take your phone calls with them as well on Coast to Coast AM. Bryce Zabel, Richard Dolan with us. Richard, you were talking about Carter. Let you get back to that story.
Well, yeah, just very quickly. The story is that Jimmy Carter was briefed on the UFO/ET topic in June 1977, so that's really in the first few months of his presidency. What my person told me was that it's not known what was said exactly during that briefing. But when the friend of this individual saw the president at the end of it, Jimmy Carter was seen in a really upset state of mind, with his elbows on his desk and his head in his hands.
Hmm.
And he was obviously weeping, or at least in tears or close to it. So it was very upsetting. This was an ET briefing. I asked, well, what do you think it was? And this guy just wouldn't speculate.
What could upset him so much? I'd be you know, delighted.
Well, what if it was some bad news?
That's the like they're taking people and things like that.
I think so. I mean, we have another account that we got through AD. Actually, I think Bryce should probably tell this one, but it deals with a briefing in an underground facility during the early Reagan administration. So yet another high-level official.
This individual said that he had been briefed for a number of weeks, and without getting too specific because of the source, he ended up saying literally that he cried himself to sleep every night. And when asked about why that would be the case, he said because he had three children, and this was the kind of world that they were going to grow up in. Now, you got to have some pretty bad news to cry yourself to sleep. After a briefing.
Well, that sounds like a David Jacobs theory now, doesn't it?
Yeah, but again, one thing we should all take into account is it doesn't have to be A or B, it may be C when you get down to the basic answer, because we don't have all the facts. It may be that there is a different collection of individuals or beings that have interacted with us, and some of them are bad.
Well,
and the other thing that we might want to add is simply, you know, people react to this subject in a wide range, wide variety of ways, and it could very well be that you would just be deeply upset simply by the fact that your worldview, your paradigm, is now shattered.
I think there's a lot of truth in that, George. My experience is just even in talking to family members or friends or whatever is, not everyone wants to talk about this subject. And it isn't that they, I'll start to try to tell them, well, but these are the sources, and this is why I feel the way I feel about it. And that isn't why they don't want to talk about it. They just don't want to talk about it because it's disturbing to them. It really rocks their world and shatters whatever sense of reality or however they think the world is working. And that's not a comfortable place to be in for most people. It's not comfortable for me.
Well, there, you know, there is that jarring effect when you really realize that we're not alone in the universe and you feel as if there's some proof to that. It's, you know, it does get you, but, you know, we're conditioned. I mean, you two are conditioned. I'm conditioned.
If
we truly believe there's extraterrestrial life, we believe we've been visited. I don't think it would be a shock to us if somebody came forward publicly and said, you're all right. You're all right. And I don't think I'd be shocked if they went on and elaborated and said, they've been abducting people for years.
But again, that's you. And you are the host of a national show that discusses mm-hmm. these things on a regular basis. So the real question is, what about the people who never think about it?
Right.
They would be shocked. And as we go forward, I'm sure we're going to be talking about this tonight. There's different kinds of disclosure. Just for a baseline here, my definition of disclosure would be when somebody in an official capacity, whether it be a president, a premier, or a pope, I don't really care, just somebody.
Or a military man.
Or a military person. Who acknowledges the most basic thing would be disclosure, and the most basic thing I could say would be that there is somebody who isn't us using advanced technology that isn't supposed to exist, that is from somewhere that isn't here.
Do you agree with that definition, Richard?
I think so. That's a bare bones disclosure, and I think that'll work as long as they're speaking in some kind of official capacity.
Right, and obviously it's going to raise, you know, as Rich and I have said many times, there is no such thing as being a little bit of disclosure any more than there is being a little bit pregnant. You make that first basic disclosure, and that may be enough to get the ball rolling, but eventually people are, and not eventually, immediately people and the media, et cetera, will have lots of questions about this. And we'll get deeper and deeper into what's really going on. And although we may not get the entire story laid out for us immediately, the entire story will someday be coming out.
Bryce, you live in Hollywood. I've heard for years, and I've never been able to prove it, that top Hollywood producers and directors are fed information from governments or agencies in order to temper things like, you know, close encounters and visitations, in order to buffer the day when this could happen.
The climatization theory.
Yeah, is that true?
I personally don't see it. I do think, and Rich and I have discussed this, and we talk about it in the book, that there is a certain amount of evidence that in the early days after World War II, certainly in the 50s, during those rash of saucer movies, there was more coordination between people who had worked in intelligence capacities in Hollywood than there later was. But I take a pretty negative approach on that whole thing now, because I don't think that Hollywood needs to be fed anything to make movies about aliens. We have alien movies in greater abundance than we've ever had in history, and I don't think anybody's making them. I certainly didn't make and haven't made what I've made because somebody told me to make it. I made it because these movies are compelling, people like to see them, and they give you conflict. We had Nazis for conflict. We have terrorists for conflict. But the best conflict right now is aliens. And so people use that. And if I would also put this out, if we were being fed a lot of information in Hollywood to cause us to write movies and television series a particular way, we would not have this completely contradictory mess of films and television that all have different points of view about what this contact is all about. There'd be a little bit more coordination. I mean, even Spielberg is the person who people focus on and say that he was somehow helping us prepare for some kind of future disclosure. But yeah, if you look at the film output of Steven Spielberg, he has been across the board, from the cuddly E.T. scientist of E.T., to the benevolent space brothers of Close Encounters, and is currently got a television series on Falling Skies, where they basically, and of course War of the Worlds, where they've come to conquer. So yeah, if he was being fed something, I'd really like to know. I think the person who's feeding it to him should be fired.
Also, the acclimatization argument is, I've never been a fan of that argument, never really. It just doesn't make sense to me. First of all, the acclimatization would be going now for about 60, 70 years.
A little long, I think.
You think we had enough, guys?
Yeah.
I think we're ready.
And then
I think
the other
thing
is that
if people told us right now, most people would go, yeah, I kind of figured that.
The other part of it, though, is that if you've got this profound and world-changing secret that you absolutely do not want to share, and they don't want to share this, then why are you going to just be throwing these little hints out to get the public to start to believe? Now, what they have done, in my view, is to go the other route and to use whatever means are necessary to throw cold water on this, which that historically we can see and make a great argument for through the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, right up into our own century. We see many examples where there's this ham-fisted kind of debunkery that clearly gets government support. Why? Because it's all over the mainstream of our major television networks, which have the closest relationships to intelligence community and the government. So, no, I think if anything, it goes the other way. That they're like the little Dutch boy with his finger in the dike, trying to keep the sea from coming in.
There's just another logic issue to this whole thing that we should at least consider, which is if you look at the bulk of films and television product that has been made on this topic, there at the core of most of these, there is some kind of nefarious government operation that is trying desperately to keep the secret and lying and covering up and even resorting to lethal measures in many films. I mean, we certainly did that in Dark Skies. They did it in X-Files.
Sure. They're no heroes, in other words.
Spielberg has done it in Close Encounters. And my question for you would be, if you were the guys doing the cover-up, why would it be to your benefit to have people making product that says you're exercising lethal options to maintain a secret? I just don't think that's logical. But I do think that this is fueled by one reality. And my friend Robbie Graham, who runs Silver Screen Saucers and has studied this and is studying it, writing his PhD on it, has pointed out is that there is a lot of evidence that a lot of these big films like Battle L.A. or Battleship make some kind of relationship with the military in order to get their cooperation so that they can put more of this this fantastic material on the screen in the best possible way. And that makes sense. I mean, obviously, the military, it's to their advantage to look like they've got great hardware in these films because it serves the purpose of saying to our honest and legitimate enemies throughout the world, be careful before you pick on America.
We have a telescope that was launched almost 9 years ago, the Spitzer Telescope. And today, NASA said that it has captured light coming from a super planet. And I saw that story, and we're not talking about reflected light, some kind of light coming from this planet. I saw that story and went, whoa, it captured a city. They've seen light on a city. You know the way Earth looks from space at night, right? And I'm saying, this is an incredible story. But then they went on to say, the planet is not habitable. It is way too close to its star, its sun. So it's not going to happen. So that kind of killed that. But I think it's just a matter of time before science truly catches up with this and says, folks, this is real. I mean, there are civilizations everywhere.
Exobiologists are constantly bumping up the number of what they believe are habitable planets throughout the galaxy.
Now there could be billions.
Well, in fact, that would make more sense as if you were trying to acclimate anybody to the existence of extraterrestrial life. Certainly, the sort of the steady stream of we found another planet, we think there are billions and trillions instead of just dozens or hundreds. That certainly changes the equation more than just making another UFO invasion film.
I agree. And you know, every time a planet like this comes out, we talk to Seth Shostak from SETI, and we say, Seth, are you going to aim toward this area? Because it would seem like a natural. If science says, here's an Earth-like planet, mm-hmm. Well, then, you know, aim your telescopes there. At least you're not shooting out randomly. You know they're there.
Well, George, Rich and I are kind of skeptical about SETI in general, because if you think about it, if the reality is that we have been visited, then any attempt to be pointing public telescopes toward the sky to try to prove there's life in the universe has got to be some kind of diversion, because the truth is they're already here.
Well, and keep in mind, it could be old technology, too.
That's right. So if they're already here, then the guys that are listening through radio telescopes in an AD after disclosure world are going to be among those scientists who are the least credible of any in that environment.
What we'll hear one day will be an old Art Bell show, and they'll be jumping going, see, it came back from another planet.
Well, I hope it's an Art Bell show then.
Me too.
That would be good for the program.
Absolutely. Bounced off a planet and it came back. How about that? I mean,
They have to run far and fast, though. I'm talking about the SETI community. They have to run far and fast from the UFO topic. They just it's political as much as intellectual and ideological, because obviously, if any of the prominent folks at SETI were to say, oh, yeah, I believe in UFOs, gee, what do you know? That would not go well for SETI in terms of their public image, and they've always had to distance themselves.
Yeah.
Well, that brings up the whole Carl Sagan thing. Here is a man who was considered to be the proponent of SETI and certainly became the face and voice of that kind of exploration of the universe. And think about what Carl Sagan said during his career. He became famous for basically talking about the billions and billions of planets
out there,
suns
stars,
out there. Yeah. But he routinely said that he believed that the universe must be teeming with life.
Yep.
But then he also said, but they can't possibly be
here. That's right. He qualified.
And so that doesn't make any sense, because here's the same guy saying they could be 1,000 years in advance of us technologically, or 1,000,000 years, but he knows enough that they couldn't possibly be here. I just think that was a sham as well.
Well, see, you cannot think of any visitations as being from our kind of propulsion system. I mean,
no.
If you do, then that's an accurate statement. There's no way they could get here.
Absolutely.
But if they're that advanced, they have learned how to bend space and time somehow, and they're able to get here.
But we are on
that one other theory, though. I mean,
ourselves.
They could be bending space and time to get here. And in fact, you have to admit that there are so many things about the way the universe works that we don't know.
We don't
that
know.
That would be a legitimate way to look at it. Another theory that seems to be gaining more credence would be, if you were trying to explore the universe, you might build intelligent machines with AI built into them that were designed to replicate themselves and continue to move throughout the universe.
Exactly.
And we may very well be in the midst of a visitation from one or multiple groups, and they may include or be predominantly involved with some kind of machine intelligence.
Well, think of it this way, and we are a generation or so away from doing that ourselves.
I think so, too. I've got a friend in St. Louis. He's from Italy. His name's Adele. He listens to the show religiously, loves UFOs, calls them UFOs. And he says they talk about this in Italy a lot. Will we get disclosure from another country before anything pops here?
That's a great question.
That would be like for a Tom Clancy thriller. Actually, Bryce and I really thought about this one, too. But, Bryce, why don't you go and...
Well, no, I think that that's certainly one way that it the dam breaks. But I would put it this way. It'll probably still be the United States that breaks the story, if you will. If we get intelligence, and our intelligence is reasonably good around the world, if we get intelligence that somebody else is about to go first...
We'll do it.
Well, then we'll do it. But I do think, for example...
Or we'll quash it.
True if we could, but if China, for example, or Brazil, which are countries that don't really need to bow before us, they're not part of NATO or anything of the sort, if they were about to go and we heard about it, we wouldn't be able to stop them. We could talk to them about it. We might be able to coordinate, or we might... A president might very well get briefed at that point and make a decision.
Well, you know what boggles my mind about all this? I mean, Russia announces last week they want to go to the moon. 2030 is their projected date. Yet back in the 60s, weren't they almost going toe-to-toe with us to get there? I don't understand at how 60 or 70 years could go by. I mean, you're talking about almost a century. And they're talking about that's the date we're going to go to the moon? There's something weird here.
I agree. We had a moon program that, for all through the 60s, our program was sending guys into Earth orbit. Then for a couple of years, we jump way out to the moon. We're there. But then the feat's not replicated since 1972.
And this is old technology, Rich.
It. I have to agree. It does not make sense. And this is one reason that my own speculation has gone in the last couple of years toward what I think is a secret space program. I can't prove it.
Well, Hoagland believes that too.
Well, it's my own belief that there's at least enough evidence of anomalies in Earth orbit. There's things that are out there that are not, they don't seem like they're supposed to be out there. So that there's very likely a clandestine program there. But in terms of with Russia, yeah, I caught that story too. And it's on an official basis, on our official truth basis, a lot of these things don't make sense.
No, Richard, we're going to come back with you and Bryce. We're going to talk more about AD after disclosure. Boy, if you like this hour, wait till you hear what's coming up next.